Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and today it's time to reevaluate the young guns on the PGA Tour. That torch getting passed just a little bit to a younger generation. And joining me to break it all down to debate the rankings, Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, how was your Christmas? How's it going?
It was great. I hope it was great for all of you as well. As you can see, the traveling circus of the First Cut Podcast continues on. I'm in my parents' bedroom, so one more day here, but Christmas was great.
glad to hear it. Kyle Porter, also here. KP, Merry Christmas. Good to see you.
You too. I did the thing where I got my wife a battery-operated leaf blower for Christmas, and...
How'd that go?
Well, she loved it. That's kind of her... I mean, that's what she wanted, but I've also, she's like, why are you using this more than I am? And it's like, well, I like it a lot too. So it was a little bit of the Christmas gift to my wife, but also to myself.
Love that. Gentlemen, we are in almost 2021, almost there, a couple more days, and the young guns certainly exceeded our expectations in 2020. So we're going to take the opportunity to kind of re-rank some of these guys. We're going to talk through an article that Kyle wrote on CBSSports.com right now, and I think there's going to be some interesting debate here. Also, this is something we had on our list to do, but Bracketologist 3 left this in an iTunes review, asked us to do this. So here we are. We're going to do it right here for you, Bracketologist. And if there's another topic you'd like us to talk about, leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and we will knock it out. All right, let's jump into this. KP, I just want to go through your first – let's do your first three real quick. Let's break it down like that and kind of see why you chose one over another, if we can have a bit of a debate here. So I'm just gonna spoil this. Your top three golfers in order. Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Matthew Wolf, which I think those are the three names that were always going to be in the top three, but not necessarily in that order would be a consensus.
Yeah, I labored over this. This was really hard. And I think if you know, depending on what the qualifications are, you could rank them very differently, because that's if you were just saying who, like, the most accomplished of the young of the, we're calling it under 25 guys. Yeah. Hovland would not be at the top. It would, I think, obviously be Morikawa, but I did it based on sort of future ceiling. So what's the ceiling of these guys from December 28th into the future? And I still labored over it. The cool thing about this is there's not a wrong answer. You could have Wolf, I could be talked into, honestly, like Sungjae or Scheffler at the top and be like, oh, I don't know. I could see that. For me, it was Hovland, because I think he's the best guy from tee to green. And if you look at kind of Data Golf has this really cool tool where you can compare what guys have done in their careers and kind of look at a comp based on historical performance. And some of Hovland's comps from it does it based on your age year. So his 21-year-old year, his 22-year-old year. His 21-year-old year was unbelievable. I mean, it was up there. It wasn't quite with like a Rory at 21, but it was kind of getting in that range where you're talking about like historically good. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know where you guys stand on ranking those three guys, but I went Hovland, Morikawa, Wolf just because I feel like Hovland is the best out of those guys from tee to green.
Yeah, I actually dug into the age seasons as well. I'll put a pin in that for a second. Greg, you know, we're also high on Colin Morikawa, the guy who's got three victories, a major championship, and he's second on Kyle's list. Your thoughts?
So I like the top three. I think that is rather obvious. If you look at the money that they've earned, you would have Morikawa one, Wolf two, and Hovland three. But yeah. I think Hovland can jump Matthew Wolf here, but I don't think he can jump Colin Morikawa. I mean, you look at some of the things he's accomplished besides the three wins and a major championship, which is pretty important. Besides the fact that he's number seven in the world, which is a little bit better than Hovland and Wolf. He's missed just four cuts as a pro. Hovland's missed three cuts as a pro. So there's some similarities there, but this is where the line really gets drawn for me. In the 35 events Morikawa has played as a pro, which it's kind of hard to wrap your head around that. There's only 35 events. At least on the PGA Tour, 35 PGA Tour events. Well, 10 of those are top 10s. So it's almost a third of the time he plays, he's finishing inside the top 10. For Hovland, it's about a sixth of the time. So he's got five in 30 starts. And then Matthew Wolf has five in 33 starts. So they're pretty comparable there. But it's just there's a little edge to me with Morikawa in that sense. Then you look at top 25s. Well, 18 of 35 starts for Morikawa have been top 25s. 17 of 30 for Hovland. So Hovland nudges up a little bit closer in that sense too. But the real difference to me is it's the quality of the wins that we've seen out of Colin Morikawa, the quality of events that we've seen him perform in, and what he's done in the moment. Now, I know Victor Hovland made a putt in Puerto Rico on the last hole, made a birdie putt to win. I know that he made a birdie putt recently at Mayakoba. Right. Which was those are clutch moments. But you look at some of the historical shots Colin Morikawa has hit, the driver at number seven at the Workday Charity Open, where he hit it, you know, to gimme range off the tee. And then he did it again on 16 at the PGA Championship. We talked about that a little bit last week. So I look at some of these major moments for Colin Morikawa, the 23-foot putt he made on top of Justin Thomas. And I see zero fear. And I think Wolf and Hovland are just a little bit behind that when it comes to the biggest events, the biggest moments. And I think there's still a little bit more of a learning curve for them to kind of start performing in the big events. And Wolf did too. He performed great in those major championships, the PGA and the US Open. But it's a little bit different for me than Morikawa because Wolf hasn't quite accomplished what Morikawa has accomplished yet.
So you think real quick, Rick, recent history from Morikawa projects like that makes his future projection higher than a Wolf and a Hovland?
Yeah, I do. One, the head start, I think, has to play a role. It's not necessarily what you base it on, but you look at the kinds of golf courses and the venues where he's had great success on. And there's a lot of that on the PGA Tour. Memorial is a place he's going to get to go to every year for the rest of his career. And you look at a place like TPC Harding Park. Now, there are some things you can point out about that golf course, but it's a big golf course. It's the kind of course where you would expect distance to trump accuracy. Yet here he is proving to himself, if nobody else, that my game competes on the big boy golf courses. And I don't think Hovland has quite shown us that yet. Although I do think his game will attribute to those kind of golf courses. I just think Morikawa has proved a little bit more to himself than the other players.
I jumped into my database and I was trying to pull in a historical context how good these three have been in other similar aged players. So I did a similar thing, season, age. It can get a little wonky if they have a birthday in the middle of the year. But just for these purposes, gentlemen, there are, and these are measured rounds only, 9 golfers in the ShotLink era who are 23 or under to average over one stroke gained per round. Okay, so 23 or under, one stroke gained per round, only 9 seasons that's happened.
So that's what I was going to ask. It's a season's worth of, okay.
Yes. Would you like to take a crack at any of these golfers?
So there's nine seasons?
9 individual seasons, correct.
How far back does your...
ShotLink is 2004 is when it started.
Okay, so I'll go all three of these guys.
So
No. Hovland and Morikawa, not Wolf.
Okay. Morikawa's 2020 season, he averaged 1.2. And let's see here. Wolf currently is in his best season, 0.85. So he's just off. Hovland's current season, not 2020. So his 2021 season, obviously not over yet, would qualify.
Okay. So Hovland and Morikawa are two of the nine.
Yes.
Rory's in there.
Yeah, Rory's the best one. 2.4 in 2012. His 23. Yeah, it's insane.
When I was looking up comps for and I love that data golf because age matters, right? Like I think that we think of and Chris Solomon of No Laying Up is big on this. He's like, look, I get that you haven't been on the PGA Tour like Scottie Scheffler. He's almost 25. Well, he hasn't been on the PGA like the amount of time that he's been on the PGA Tour is the same as somebody like a Hovland. But he's played a lot more golf in his life, and that matters. Like that is meaningful. And as I was looking up these 21-year-old seasons, because that's such a good number to go off of if you can get it like at a high level, if Data Golf was able to measure it. The Rory one was like, what is this? I mean, it was insane. So Rory, Hideki?
Yeah, Hideki's got two of them actually. So Hideki's 2015 and Hideki's 2014, which I think he was 22 and 23, are both in there.
Okay. And then I think Ricky was up there.
He is, but he doesn't break the one stroke per round mark. Gotta be 0.92. Spieth, right? All right. Spieth. So Spieth has three of them. Yeah. So Spieth has his 2015 season, the only with Rory, the only other season to average more than two strokes per round, his 2016 and his 2013 season. So three from Spieth. And then it gets filled out with a Jon Rahm season, his 2017. There's, you know, Justin Suh has 10 measured rounds in 2021. That technically counts until it doesn't. So it's a very, and Joaquin Neiman in the current season as well. So it's not a big list, and some of the names that have come out of it, you know, major winners or guys that, you know, Rahm ranked top three in the world. It's pretty crazy.
What was your, give me your top three, Rick. How would you rank them based on ceiling going forward?
Yeah. So it's weird because I'm probably much higher on Wolf than a lot of people are, but I still don't know how I can keep him like, I think he still has to be third, if that makes sense. So Wolf is really interesting because he's really hard to model. What we saw from him is the growth of his game at an astronomical rate. I mean, it's been so fast week in week. It's just unbelievable. So I'm really bullish on him, but I think he still has to be three, probably behind, I think, Hovland second. As much as I love him, Morikawa just feels more complete. Morikawa's approach game, which, I mean, it's not that Hovland has anything to sneeze at, but like to already be able to break through, have a major championship. I think Morikawa, what he did after he missed his first cut, I think is more interesting than what he did before he missed his first cut. I think that he opened up the range of outcomes a little bit. I think he stopped playing to make the cut. I think he kind of said, I'm willing to miss a cut. I'm willing to take on additional risk. And with additional risk comes additional reward. So I probably still go Morikawa, Hovland, Wolf, although I think Wolf is a lot closer than maybe others want to believe he is.
I thought one thing that was interesting as I kind of looked at the numbers was I think Morikawa's driver is underrated. We always talk about he's short. And yeah, he is. He's not long. I mean, he's long compared to us three, but compared to, you know, the rest of PGA Tour, he's 100th, 120th. He's not very long, but his strokes gained off the tee is still pretty good. It's really good, actually. It's really solid. And I thought Hovland's approach game was kind of underrated. That was not something that, you know, I know he's really good off the tee, but his iron play has been really, really solid. And you know, he's talked about how his short game is not very good, and that's true. It's not, but Matthew Wolf's short game's been actually worse than Hovland's has, and that's a little bit, I don't know, you could go either way. I struggled with Wolf because you look at it and the numbers are like, I don't know, it's not like Sung Jae-im had a better 21-year-old year. Sung Jae-im had a better 22-year-old year. I guess Wolf is still in his 21 or whatever the case. Like Sung Jae-im's numbers at the same ages were better than what Matthew Wolf's are. But if you've ever been around Wolf, and I spent a little bit of time with him when he was at Oklahoma State, he has this such just an intangible thing about him that, and you know, Mark will be fired up that I'm saying this, but like you can't measure it in strokes gain. And I think we see that when he contends at the PGA, we see that when he pops up at the US Open doing stuff that, I mean, Justin Ray said it hasn't been done since what, 1880 or 1890 or whatever.
Yeah. And so
I don't know how to factor that in, because that matters. Like it just does. If you've been around sports, stuff like that matters. And we can't just do like the spreadsheet golf thing, because Webb Simpson would be your Masters champ instead of Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, only a top 10 instead. Greg, I want to move on to three other guys, but real quick on Wolf, because I think this is interesting. And I think he's the one that, as I mentioned, I think he's so hard to predict what he is. And I hate to throw the comp out to Dustin Johnson because DJ's such an all-timer, but like, how long did it take DJ to figure out the wedges? And once he did, now he's the number one player in the world, and like prolifically the number one player in the world, right? Like I think that there's a case to be made for Wolf, and it might be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, or it might never happen, that he figures out kind of the rest of his game, has the weapon as the driver in the bag, and like it might get scary.
Yeah, it really could. Now you mentioned this is also part of it when you rank these players. And I know that we'll focus on Wolf here, but where's the glaring weakness? And if you improve that, what's the gain to be had, right? So for Victor Hovland, the short game's the weakness. If he improves that, is that going to save him a full shot around? What's the gain? And where, like, you saw what Bryson gained when he gained his distance. Not that distance was a weakness, but Wolf kind of has that already. He has that firepower, which I think raises his ceiling tremendously. Those other areas of his game, he improves on the short game, and he gets that kind of and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily just the wedge play. I think with Matthew Wolf, it's really the decision making, the maturity of a player in the way that you go about a round and go about a tournament and go about a season and go about a career. And DJ seems to have really figured that out. He identified an area where if I improve my wedge play, I'm going to have a lot of wedges into greens most PGA Tour weeks, and the gains will be constant. The gains will be consistent. You can make an argument if you're Victor Hovland, well, I'm not really going to miss very many greens. So this may save me a shot, 1.2 shots per tournament. And how big of a difference will that make? I think it's a big difference, but it's not as consistent as the improvement with the wedge play for Dustin Johnson. The other thing I'll add about Wolf is I think he's got a great putting stroke. And I think when you see him start to make some really good decisions and play the strategy game the way a Dustin Johnson does, I think that's when you start to see him winning more events. I don't think there's one area that is a real concern for him. Maybe the numbers say it's short game, but Hovland to me, it scares me when he's got a pitch shot. I'm worried he's going to blade it over a green or shank it. I don't have that worry with Wolf. It's just, is he going to hit it close? So it's very interesting.
I agree with you about his putting. If you watch the final round of the PGA Championship, you would not think this, but he's actually a pretty good putter. And
yeah, he is.
Especially for the level of ball striking that he's at. I mean, if you're a zero putter, I mean, Morikawa talked about that. I think he was on this podcast about just trying to be a zero putter. And if you're a zero putter, you're going to be in contention.
Which, by the way, Kyle, not to interrupt you, he told us on this podcast that he found something at the first round of the Players' Championship and he tried to keep that going. He talked about trying to be a zero putter. And by the way, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he became a slightly positive putter after the shutdown and what, won twice?
Yeah, I do have the numbers in front of me. 2019, he was plus 0.09, and 2020, he was plus 0.04. That's on Data Golf in terms of strokes gained putting. And if he's right there, he's going to win once, twice a year, or at least like be playing to a level where he could have won or whatever. I don't know. We've been talking about this for 20 minutes, and I'm less convinced of my rankings than I was at the beginning. And I think here's, and we can move on. On this, I think the next 2 years are so important for these guys, because as you're looking back at what a John Rahm did, what a Justin Thomas did. I mean, Victor Hovland's first, his 21 and 22 year old year, better than Justin Thomas. I mean, or at least like right with him. But these guys that are top three, top five in the world, they make this leap at 23 or 24. Rahm did it, and he's been, like, you know, playing at a top two level in the world. Justin Thomas did it at 24. And that's where, you know, you could go the other way too. I mean, Bud Colley was a name that popped up as I was kind of researching that at 21 was the same, at least statistically, the same type of player as all three of these guys. And it kind of goes the other way. So I just, I don't know. I think I'm fascinated to watch them over the next 2 years. And I think those years are so important to kind of what they eventually become.
There were some really good Hunter Mahan 25 years and under seasons as well. So things can certainly go awry. All right, let's add a little bit more confusion into this, Greg, because the next three in Kyle's rankings are Scottie Scheffler, Sung Jae-im, Joaquin Niemann, who I would argue are like criminally left out of this conversation about young guns, right? We only lump the three together, and these guys, and there is a case to be made, and I think especially with Scottie and especially with Sungjae, that they might be in the top three. It's the real deal.
Yeah, they are.
There's something about the top three, Morikawa, Wolf, and Hovland. They group together so nicely. They played college golf at the same time. They've like, it's as if they've been on this journey together. So they're really easy to pair, and they're really easy to compare these three guys. It's almost, you almost get the feel, this is a Kyle Porter kind of a prediction, but you almost feel like they're going to become honorary starters at the Masters one day.
Wow.
Like, this is like a big three.
That's
extreme.
Way beyond what I was. We won't even be alive for that prediction.
a classic Kyle prediction is one that he has 25 years to figure out if he's right or not. That one, yeah, we got some time.
But they have a feel. They have that feel. They have that feel of a big three where. I'm not sure they'll ever accomplish that, but Scottie, Sungjae, and Joaquin Niemann, they kind of came from different parts of the world at different times, at different ages, and they don't group together quite as nicely. So it's hard to rank them. I think that's partly where that comes from. So Kyle has Scottie, Sungjae, and then Joaquin.
Yeah.
Scottie and Sungjae, I have a little bit of a hard time with differentiating. But I do, I think Joaquin does belong in the sixth spot. And this is strange, likely unfair, but with Joaquin Niemann, I feel like we know what he is. He's been out here for so long. He's under 25. Yeah. We kind of know who he is as a player. And I think you're going to continue to see this through his career where he plays an aggressive style and there are weeks where he's on and he contends and he can win. And then there are weeks where you don't really hear from Joaquin that much. I don't know exactly why that is. Maybe it's the struggles that he has with the putter. But I think there's a little bit of he's a level below these guys. He's going to be a great pop-up winner, and I think he'll accumulate a number of wins through his career. But I don't see him being as steady, as consistently near the top of the leaderboards as Morikawa, Hovland, and Wolf.
I think at this point, Niemann is certainly more volatile than most of these guys are. Sungjae's 2019 season, Kyle, was the last one of those that are 23 or under, 1+ strokes gained per round or better. So Sungjae's 2019 season, that's the year he won Rookie of the Year. His 2020 season, he had a little bit of a rough patch after the restart, but still played well. I think he and Scottie are about to inject themselves into this conversation more often.
See, I feel a little bit about Sungjae the way that Greg feels about Joaquin, in that, I mean, the dude's played so many tournaments that it's like, it feels like it's who he is. And maybe that's a little unfair. It's kind of like the thing where, you know, in the NFL or NBA draft, where it almost helps you that you haven't played very much. So there's more of like an unknown, like with,
mystery.
Yeah. What's the Bills quarterback,
Josh Allen.
And it was like, I don't know. Like, he played for Wyoming. Like, there's not a ton of stuff on, and it helps you. Like, it benefits the way you're talked about. And with Sungjae, he's played so much that it sort of just feels like this is who he is. And that's a really good player, and it's a really good trajectory. You know, the two names that popped up for him on Data Golf were Jason Day and Ricky Fowler. And I would argue that Day and Fowler have had more similar careers than people would think, based on just kind of their level of play. Now the wins have been different, right? Day's won a major. He's won. Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say that the 18-month stretch from Jason Day where he won like seven times is just like absolutely unheard of stuff. But I mean, if you kind of remove that, they're probably much more similar than people would like to think they are.
Right. And I think that, you know, some of that maybe you attribute to Jason Day as the best putter in the world for 2 or 3 years. That feels a little lucky, but also there's some obviously skill involved with that. I think I've got Scheffler ahead of Sungjae simply because I don't think Sungjae is as good of an iron player as Scheffler is. I think his short game's better. And that's where I think Scheffler is fascinating because there are comps for him. I pulled up a Phil Mickelson comp at kind of the same age that if he improves his short game, I mean, he was really good from tee to green this last year. And if you just look at strokes gained over, you know, 2020, he was the best out of all these guys. He was, I think, 1.52 or 1.55, something like that. And I think if he improves his short game a little bit, I'm really fascinated. Now, you've also, like, we can't play spreadsheet golf again. You got to win. You know, you can't be right. Fee now. You got to go out and get some wins. So I think that's the other thing with him, that it's going to be really interesting to see how 2021 goes.
You know, that's not the extent of all the under 25 guys. I mean, there's so many of them, Greg, in the top 100 in the world. You start to throw in, you know, Robert McIntyre, Will Zalatoris, Doc Redman, Siwoo Kim, a couple of guys playing on the Euro Tour. I mean, this conversation about quote young gun, it's not going away. Like this is the passing of the torch.
There are players behind these guys too that we haven't heard of yet, who are right in there. I guess Cam Champ's 20. Is he 26 now because he's right around that number too. So there are a ton of players who are in this young gun category, and it's amazing to watch. It really is. And you start to look at some of these other names and some of the players that are not from America. We're familiar now with Will Zalatoris. It's an easy take to say, yeah, he's going to be a great player. But if he follows the path of Sungjae Im and Scottie Scheffler, guys who had great success on the Korn Ferry Tour, he's going to have a great year and he's going to jump into this conversation. The guys that really give you the question marks are the Robert McIntyres, the Aaron Ray, Jazzy Jane, as I like to call him. I'll leave the rest out. These are players you don't necessarily know quite as much about. Siwoo Kim, we have a pretty good idea. I feel like I know who Siwoo Kim is. He's a player's champion for one, but he is another one of those really volatile guys. What do these guys do that come over from overseas that start their career on the European Tour, make a name for themselves? When they get to the PGA Tour, does it translate? And do they become the next wave of the Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, those European Tour guys that started over there that come over here and have that great success? And it's yet to be seen. It's hard to know. You don't get a chance to watch them quite as much. So I'm very interested, but there is a healthy class of young guns out there.
How is Siwoo Kim still under 25?
And he's been like 24 forever. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's going to be Joaquin Niemann and Sungjae Im soon.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I want to touch on maybe some new names coming into this pipeline here in a second. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back. We've talked about all the guys under 25. There's only so much further we can go. We can have the Charlie Woods conversation if you want to go all the way down to 11, but I'm kind of focused a bit more.
I'm good.
Yeah, we've done that, I think. Like who's next, right? So I think there. I think the pathway to the PGA Tour for being very young, I think it's like better if you're younger. Not better if you're younger now, but like if you're younger, it's better now than it ever was, which is the PGA Tour University, Kyle, where they've got the rankings and these guys get a lot more exposure. You see guys like Cole Hammer, at least orbiting the PGA Tour much younger. You've got guys like Akshay Bhatia, who decides to turn pro at, I don't even know what he was, 16, 17, what he turned pro at. Unbelievable.
He was 18.
And like that's, even though they're only a couple of years younger, that to me feels like the new crop.
Well, yeah. And I think it's really interesting. I don't know if you guys heard, Keith Mitchell was on, and maybe we talked about this, but he was on the No Laying Up podcast a couple weeks ago. And he was talking about, who's the kid from Georgia? Davis Thompson, who played the U.S. Open. He led the U.S. Open for a while on like Thursday or Friday. And he was like, look, he's a professional who's playing amateur golf. And I thought that was such a just succinct way to kind of talk about, there's a lot of those guys. You know, I think about maybe even somebody like an Austin Eckroat, who's at Oklahoma State, which, by the way, I think we're going to look back in like 20 years and be like, wait a second, Austin Eckroat, Matthew Wolf, and Victor Hovland were on the same college team.
It's crazy.
And Christopher Ventura.
Yeah.
And
did they ever lose?
No.
Okay.
No. They won tournaments by like 30. I mean, it was embarrassing.
As they should.
But they had a bunch of professionals who were playing amateur golf. And so I think that what's really interesting is as that becomes more common, and I think that's sort of the trajectory that we're on, it's going to be harder to stand out among that crowd. And so it's going to be harder to be a Matthew Wolf unless you have this weird swing that is kind of set you apart. It's going to be harder to be a Colin Morikawa. It just, as the competition gets better, it gets harder and harder to set yourself apart. But, you know, I go back to Justin Ray wrote about this earlier in the year and kind of looked at the data analyzing like, winners on the PGA Tour and competition on the PGA Tour is just statistically getting younger. It just is. And I don't think that's like breaking news. I think that's what everyone would expect, but it's still interesting as we think about like, is Justin Thomas getting old on the PGA Tour? Like that sounds stupid, but like, I think that we've had that conversation with Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler is getting lapped by the Will Zalatoris Tauruses of the world. And that's not an indictment of Ricky. It's just reality. And, you know, what does that mean for the next 10 years? I'm excited to kind of cover that as all of it unfolds.
You know, it's interesting, Kyle, a couple points you made there. First and foremost, it's important to realize there's only so many cards, right? There's only 125 plus cards out there. So there's not that many. And the group of young players become what normal is, that becomes what the guys who are coming up to the PGA Tour look like. And they still have to go out and compete with the Matthew Wolfs, Victor Hovlands, Colin Morikawas, who are gaining experience on the PGA Tour as we speak. And they're going to have to go compete with that and separate themselves as young stars. And the guys that are out there are Joaquin Neiman is going to be 28 years old with, you know, nearly 10 years of PGA Tour experience. That's
crazy.
PGA Tour experience. So that is there's still a level to jump. I mean, it's hard to imagine. So I think to the question of, is Justin Thomas getting old? No, I don't think so. But the prime is getting younger. Your time to shine is shifting to an earlier age where it used to be, oh, well, when you get into your 30s, that's when you really learn how to win. You're getting your feet wet in your 20s. Because most guys are going through college, they're 20, 22, 23. They end up on tour when they're 24. First 6 years, they're getting their feet wet and they learn how to win between 30 and 40. And that's the prime. Well, that's not your prime anymore. You start getting to 35 is you're starting to enter. And there are, of course, exceptions, but you start entering kind of a no man's land place where you're on the tail end of your career, yet you have 15 years before you get to PGA Tour champions. So prime to me is now 25 to 35. I think it shifted about 5 years earlier.
Is this the first podcast to talk about Justin Thomas being on PGA Tour champions?
He's going to dominate though when he gets there.
I think the counter to that, I don't disagree with you. I love talking about this stuff, but I think the counter to that is Dustin Johnson. Like, what do you do with, and it's hard because like he was this good when he was 26 also. So but I do think there's some sort of, he's gained something, right? Like he's gained something at 36 or whatever he is that he didn't have at 26, and you can't fast forward to get there. It takes mm-hmm. time. It takes experience. It takes wisdom. It takes just living life, I think, to get to where DJ's gotten. But how many, is that going to be the exception and not, or the exception to the rule, right? Like, is that going to be more rare than maybe it used to be? Because I think used to, like, the general, like you were kind of saying, like the general idea was you get out on the tour, you kind of learn everything, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, you get to your peak, you kind of sit there for 5 or 6 years or whatever, and then you descend. But is our careers going to look more like maybe a Rory? Is Rory done winning majors? Is it going to be more like that? Is Colin Morikawa done winning majors? That sounds ridiculous, but you know, maybe he doesn't win a major for 3 or 4 years, and then maybe he doesn't win another one again. I don't know. There's only so many of them. I think the conversation around all of this stuff is so interesting and fascinating when it comes to the sport as a whole.
There's only so many of them. We'll leave it at that, gentlemen. Plenty of things to talk about in the future. Rest of the week looks like this. 2021 storylines, which we are brewing up, and then get your thinking caps ready. Do your research. We are going to roll the trivia back out. Greg, your thoughts on us bringing back the trivia?
I need some, I need this. I need a little revenge. I need another shot at the belt. The first one, KP and I had a great battle. It was a duel, you know, that will be long remembered, as you can tell. The second one was a little bit of a route.
It was a Bryson Wolf situation, I think.
I
was Bryson.
Well, I don't even know if I'd say that. I think it's me, more like me. Maybe I'm kind of like a Ricky Fowler in the sense I'm starting to wonder if that's all I got.
Oh God.
Did you guys see the Bryson video where he tried to get to 147 swing speed?
No, but I saw another Bryson video. But tell us about this one.
It was like, it looked, it was so earnest, but it looked so like just fake. I mean, it was like these like seven humans in a living room, and Kyle Berkshire's there. I don't know any of the other guys. It's in Chris Como. It's the same living room that all the stuff happens in.
Yeah.
And Bryson's in a Christmas onesie.
Okay. That's what I wanted to talk about.
And he's trying to hit 147 swing. I'm like, what? This is like the best golfer in the world. What are we doing?
Did you see he also hit the trick shot from up on top, down,
yeah,
below?
Yeah, that was okay. Same video.
It took him 100 tries. I watched it live on Instagram. The guy never gave up. After like 30 tries, everyone was like, Bryson, it's over, my dude. Like, it's all good. You don't have to make this. Like 100 tries in, he knocks it in. The guy never gives up.
He really – they're like, that's an oversized way to state like his ethos, but he is – that's kind of like what he's about.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's kind of crazy about it, which is half the battle.
Also, I guess I would too, Greg. He just carries the U.S. Open trophy with him everywhere, right? So he just had it. He just had it like next to where he was chipping from for 100 straight attempts.
Yeah,
I guess I'd do the same.
I mean, I definitely would. I would have it in my arm right now as we were doing this. I'd be, yeah, always.
Greg, what is 147 swing speed equate to on ball speed? Like broadly speaking.
Oh man, well, this requires a little bit of math, but let me get you a number. If you consider that a perfect smash factor is 1.5. Mm-hmm. So if you took 147 club head speed times 1.5, you're looking at 220. Okay. So if you, let's assume you can't really control, you can't find the face at 147. So a miss hit, let's say it's one of the worst miss hits Bryson has, and it's a 140, it's a 1.4 smash factor. So times 1.4, you're looking at 205. So, I mean, you have to miss it, and you're at 205. So it's, that's flying. That ball speed is flying.
Berkshire was up to, I think, 160 swing speed.
He hit his 8-iron 300 yards.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of, I mean, when you're at a 160 swing speed, there, most of our listeners here, a 160 ball speed would be really, really fast. And I consider myself to be a longer hitter. I'm about a 165. A normal shot for me is about 165 ball speed. I'm a PGA professional. I know I'm not a hack here.
Hold on. Did you like how he set the barrier at 160 and then said he was 165?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit faster than I'm a little faster than Berkshire clubhead speed.
Listen, how long until we have a Nick Saban, Justin Thomas joint press conference where Nick Saban says, "Is this what we want golf to be?" That's coming.
Momentarily. I have to end this, but Bruce Bingham's going to jump through my screen. But here's the thing: that Kyle Berkshire, like Bryson, like those videos that came out, like on Kyle's YouTube channel, and there was some other stuff about it, where Kyle is giving him like what he does in his body and how he gets to these numbers, and Bryson's just like it was a really fascinating conversation to be a fly on the wall, right? These two guys that are doing it. Like, and they understand each other, right? Like other normal humans and golfer, like we can't understand these numbers, but these guys were chatting through it.
Well, that's what people are like, "Oh, I'm so sick of Bryson." It's like, my dude, like what is there? I mean, I get it, but do you want us to talk about Kyle Stanley or like, what? I mean, you know, I don't
have as many Danny Lee takes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I've been studying for trivia, so I'm ready.
All right. Well, we're bringing it back later this week. For now, Greg Ducharme, thank you very much. You can find him on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find Kyle at KylePorterCBS. You can find me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.